Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events. This WBEZ podcast is supported by Hacia, whose Executive Fellows Program provides Black and Latinx business owners with real-world tools and strategies needed to master fundamental management concepts related to company stability and growth. Registrants learn through one-on-one executive coaching sessions with subject matter experts in the areas of finance, business development, operations, and legal. More info at haciaworks.org.
From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette. I'm Greta Johnson.
And I'm Trisha Bobita. And this week, our guest is David Diggs.
You may know him as that one guy who played the Marquis de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson in the original Broadway cast recording and presentation and performance of Hamilton.
So what did I miss? What did I miss? Virginia, my home sweet home, I want to give you a kiss.
Yeah, so I've listened to him do that thing.
Oh my god.
How many times?
You think a million though?
I mean, coming up on it.
At least several hundred thousand.
You round it to the nearest whole number, a million.
David also has a rap group called Clipping, and he's the executive producer of a new show on ABC called The Mayor. It is excellent.
Yes, David is everywhere
now,
including on the big screen in the new movie Wonder, which is based on a YA novel, which actually my nephew has been reading in school because I think all the children are reading Wonder in advance of this movie coming out. It's a story that has a message that's pretty hard to argue with.
Yeah, it's all about accepting people who are different from you. The story is about a little boy. He's about to start fifth grade, and he's been homeschooled through his life, partly because he was born with this genetic disease where he had a lot of facial deformities to the point where he likes to wear this astronaut's helmet most of the time. And David plays his fifth grade teacher, Mr. Brown.
Can anybody tell me what this word means? Anybody? No? Precepts are rules for really important things.
Like mottos.
Like mottos, or like famous quotes, or like lines from a fortune cookie, right? Precepts can help motivate us. They can help guide us when we have to make decisions about really important things. Okay, so who wants to read this month's precept? What about you? What's your name?
Summer.
Summer. Want to give it a shot?
When given the choice between being right or being kind, choose kind.
That's David Diggs and the new film Wonder. We're going to talk with David about all of his projects, including, of course, Hamilton.
David Diggs, welcome to Nerdette.
Hello, thank you.
So I saw Wonder last night, in which you are the teacher.
Yeah.
And I woke up this morning and my cry face muscles are sore.
They're sore a little bit, yeah.
I was like, what is this in my forehead? And then I was like, oh yeah, I cried a lot last night in a movie theater.
I know. I did too when I saw it, and I saw it all by myself. So I could I didn't have to pretend for anybody or worry about not bothering anyone. I was alone in a movie theater though, just crying.
Oh, yeah. If I were alone, I would have really...
I'm not the type to cry at movies, and I don't really enjoy cry. It's not a thing. I'm not one of these people who's like, oh, good cry. That's not part of my rubric, but it was good. You know, it was actually, so much of it was joyful, which, I don't know. It was good. I was happy it worked out that way, because that's how I felt about the script, and that's how I felt about the book. I had the same experiences with both of those, so...
I wonder, what is a movie like this that's so much about celebrating differences and choosing kindness mean for you at a time like this?
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the best things about being in this project and being associated with it is we are in a time where our leaders are sort of famous bullies, right? And our president is essentially existing on a platform of hate at this point, right? So being part of something that is a direct counter-narrative to that is really important to me, but also that just demonstrates successful outcomes of being kind, right? I think because beyond just politics right now, I think generally in business, in certainly in my business, in acting and whatever, we're told oftentimes that we have to be really cutthroat, or mm-hmm. that you always have to look out for yourself. You have to be suspicious of everybody, and that is the way to be successful. And so it's nice to be part of a success story where the road to success is actually the opposite of that. It's actually of choosing kindness over winning.
This movie is also largely geared towards kids, which I think is really important yeah. because, you know, I think the stakes for kids can feel so intense, right? When, like, yeah. all you have is this little space that you exist in and everything is just so real and intense and you don't have as much perspective in terms of the fact that, like, this will be over someday, you'll yeah. move on, it'll be okay. What do you hope kids get out of a movie like this?
I really hope that it encourages kids to just be brave enough to show up and be themselves and be fully themselves. Because that is, you realize how brave that is when you're watching this movie. You watch Augie go to school for the first time. It's just all of a sudden, I don't know, for me, I was taken right back to my first day of a new school, you know, and being so nervous. And overcoming that is a big deal. But I think it's that kind of bravery that we really need in the world. And so I hope that the film encourages that. And I do think you're right. Like, the kid focus of it is one of the things that allows us to get as emotional as we do when we watch it for adults, you know, because all of a sudden you're taken back to this time before you had figured out how to not feel things, right?
Oh, that hits me, man.
I know, but I had that revelation while I was watching. It was just that I think it was because it was so kid focused and you're sort of immediately transported into Augie's perspective and Augie's world that now you can feel everything, which is, I think, so many people have come up to me being like, oh, I was so emotional. I haven't felt like this in so long. I do think that's kind of the secret of it, is that it allows you to feel things in a way that we all sort of figure out how not to do in order to get through our days.
My name is Mr. Brown. I left Wall Street to pursue my dream and teach. Who is it that I aspire to be? That is the question that we should be asking ourselves all the time. Hey, you're not alone. What kind of person am I?
And you played Mr. Brown, who's the teacher, mm-hmm. which means that, was it all the scenes? Pretty much all the scenes you were in were just with the kids, huh?
Yeah, I only worked with kids.
One of the scenes that made me cry maybe the most was this fight scene that took place between two of the boy students. Can you tell me what the circumstances were like around filming that?
So there's a great scene in the film where two of the students they get in a fight, like a physical altercation in the hallway, and my character, Mr. Brown, comes in and breaks up the fight. And, you know, when you're shooting a film, you have to shoot things 10, 20 times. So we were going to have to do this fight a lot. And there was a ton of choreography, obviously, and, like, you know, stunt work, mats on the ground, a whole bunch of really technical stuff. But also these kids, these young actors, 11, 12-year-old actors, have to go there emotionally every time. And they did. They are such fantastic actors. And so they were, every time we ran it, they were crying. They were emotional. I'm like, you know, they're really going for each other. I was actually pulling them apart. But whenever the director called cut, it's in a hallway full of kids. And all of these young actors would come over and, like, hug the two actors who had been fighting and tell them how great that was and, like, tell jokes and lighten the mood and try to get them ready to have to do this again, because they knew that they were going to have to do it again. It was just one of the most magical things I've ever seen. And so I was crying the whole time. I was like, I'm crying in the scene because it's emotional. And then after the scene, I'm like wrecked because of these displays of kindness from these kids. And it was just, it was a really incredible day. I would absolutely never forget it.
It's pretty cool to think about the kindness in the movie and the fact that that seeped through even behind the scenes in a film like that, you know?
Yeah, and I think that has a lot to do with Stephen Chbosky, with the mm-hmm. director. He really created this atmosphere that reflected the values of the film. And that was so important. And I didn't realize at the time how rare that is and how difficult that is also, because it's the first film I'd ever done. So for him to really take the time to create that environment to get the kinds of performances that he got, not only from me and all the other adults, but from these kids, too. One of the most striking things for me watching the film is just in the background of scenes, watching kids just be kids, like sort of like play hitting each other or whatever. A lot of that wasn't scripted. It was just Stephen creating the space for kids to exist as they really are.
That is really cool. So you mentioned this is the first film you've done. Your background is in theater. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the first stage performance that you saw where you were like, oh, my God, that?
That's a good question. I don't know. I used to go see plays all the time as a kid. I'm from the Bay Area. I don't know. Like, I used to go see puppet shows at Fairyland. Shout out to Oakland. Only people from Oakland really know what that is. But at Fairyland at Lake Merritt in Oakland, they had these sort of puppet shows that were so awesome that I loved. You know, I wanted to be a puppet for a long time. I thought that was the coolest thing out.
How do you be the puppet in this scenario?
No, I don't know. Maybe we are all a little bit.
Fair enough.
But I think... I think for me, the impetus to start acting was really sort of accidental. It was about, I was very shy. I'm still very shy. But I also loved people. I love being around people. I love being in big groups of people. I was sort of a very introverted extrovert. Mm-hmm. And my fourth grade teacher one time every week used to have the whole class memorize poems. It was maybe like one or two poems we were all memorizing. You had to recite them at some point during the week, and everyone did the same poem. And one time I got up and just acted it out, you know? I don't know what made me decide to do that. But all of the kids laughed when I wanted them to laugh. And it was like a light bulb for me because it was a reason to be in a big group of people and to be heard and to be seen, but that didn't make me feel terrified, you know, because I wasn't really about me. It was about the work, kind of. And so that's what, and the only thing I knew how to do, the only thing I get right in middle school, there were school plays. So I did plays so that I could be on stage in front of people, so that I could be around people and be seen and be heard, but have it not be about me. So that's kind of why I got into theater, just because that was the only thing that presented itself to me.
So you were like, I am going to be the puppet master.
Yeah. I fancied myself a young Jim Henson.
So then how does rap fit into that? Because, I mean, I think it's probably pretty obvious looking back now at Hamilton, like, oh, of course, musical theater and rap. Like, there's obvious crossover there.
Yeah.
Did they feel like separate paths for you growing up?
No, they still don't. I mean, I started writing rap songs like probably not long after I started doing school plays, like early in high school or middle school or whatever. And for me, the writing of rap music ended up just being the easiest way for me to express myself. I work well within constraints. It's the same reason I like acting, actually, is because what acting really is a set of constraints through which you have to tell the story. I am this kind of person from this place. Here are the words I have to say. How do I tell, like, a full story through that? And rap's the same thing. You have this constraint of meter. You have this constraint of time signature. How do I use that to tell a story in a way that sounds cool and that makes people hear it? So I think the thing that attracts me to them both is the same. And I was an intern at the Hip Hop Theater Festival in 2001. Like, hip hop and theater have been happening together for a long time. The reason that Hamilton feels like such an anomaly for all of us, I think, is because the way plays work is that you do a play and you have an incredible time and generally nobody cares, right? I mean, you did it. The people who saw it had a transformative experience and that's how it goes. But the world at large doesn't pay attention to it at all. But I think for those of us who work in theater like that, hip-hop's been creeping its way in for a long time. And it was always surprising to me that it took it as long to be successful on Broadway as it had, mostly because when you look at Broadway, you know, in the 40s and 50s and even in the 60s, it was sort of relying on popular music, on the popular music of the time in order to sell tickets. And I don't know when that stopped, but, you know, rock musicals came about and then that was it. Hip-hop's been the most popular music in the world for 15 years at this point. You know, I mean, it's been a huge moneymaker. So you're right that it seems obvious, but probably because it was long overdue. He's unafraid to step in. He's constantly confusing, confounding the British henchmen. Everyone give it up for America's favorite fighting Frenchman. I'm taking this horse, battle reins, wicked red coats, weather with blood stains. And I'm never gonna stop until I make him drop a burn him up and scatter the remains down. Watch me engaging them, escaping them, and raising them out.
I go to France for more fun. I come back with more guns.
In just a minute, we're going to hear from David about being the executive producer of a new ABC show, The Mayor.
You're listening to Nerdette.
For this to succeed, there's someone else we need.
I know.
So he knows what to do in the trench, ingenuitive and fluent in French. I mean, so you're going to have to use him eventually. What's he going to do in the bench? I mean, no one has to...
David Diggs is also an executive producer of this new ABC show called The Mayor. It's on right after Black-ish. You can also watch it on Hulu. It is about a 19-year-old named Courtney Rose. He's a rapper who decides to run for mayor.
Now he's adding a new title to his playlist, Candidate for Mayor.
So, yeah, it turns out it's super easy to run for local office. Step one, get 200 signatures. Step two, don't be a felon. And I don't go to trial till next year.
I'm just playing, Ma. I love you.
And believe it or not, he wins. The show feels a lot like Parks and Rec. It's got sort of that, like,
yes,
community government feel. And then,
speaking of community, the mom on this show is one of my favorites from the show Community. Remember Yvette Nicole Brown?
Yes, she is awesome. The show is really great.
I love The Mayor very much, I think for a number of reasons. We were talking about it in our production meeting, and I'm pretty sure it's the only show on primetime that has a Black teenager male protagonist who's not an athlete or, like, in jail.
Yeah. Yeah. Revolutionary material.
Which,
right,
like,
there.
Right?
It's,
oh my
shocking,
God.
But, like, yeah. Yeah, there are a bunch of intelligent, fun, hardworking, relatively successful young Black men on this TV show.
And yeah, it's bright and funny,
yeah,
and still deals with a lot of serious stuff, but in such an enjoyable, like, it's just such a pleasure to watch it and see these people on TV, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And we're blessed with, like, this amazing cast, right? They're just, like, the most charismatic humans ever. So I think it makes the rest of our job a little bit easier in that I think they cover up a lot of our flaws sometimes.
I feel like the show is really good, too, at playing into and against stereotypes.
Yeah, yeah. The writer's room is so smart. And they do a really great job of creating humor that is, like, topical but also isn't, and political but not mean-spirited. That is a tricky line to walk. And it's, you know, Wonder Walk's a similar line, too, about, you know, that it is easy to be cynical, you know, and there's a lot of good comedic points in cynicism. That's kind of the quick way to the joke. But
right,
the mayor manages to stay away from that, and it's very cool and very tricky. And so I'm super proud of the show.
So we've talked about, like, 17 different things that you're doing right now and that you're really good at. How do you decide what goes where? Like, when you have a creative spark, like, that could be part of the rap group clipping. It could be a line that the rapper mayor has in The Mayor. It could, you know, like, how are you navigating what goes where in terms of, like, what you're excited about making?
Yeah, I think I'm still figuring it out, but I think the technique I'm going for right now is to continue to make my circles smaller. So, like, clipping, those guys make the music for The Mayor also.
Right.
We're also, I got asked to do this partnership with ESPN where I'm writing sort of sports-specific, like, rap songs.
That's awesome.
We did one for the opening day of the Warriors basketball season that they aired before the game. We shot this crazy video.
Oh,
but
my God.
I work with clipping on that, too, you know.
Back to the Bay. Finna bring another one back to the Bay. Show the whole game how to act in the Bay. Squad stacked in the Bay. You can hate, but you can't ignore the facts in the Bay. Look,
me and Rafael Casal, who's another collaborator through rap music, we, like, also have written a film together, and we also are, you know, in the process of starting a production company. Like, the way to make sure that the ideas don't get wasted is by having a great team of people around me who are smarter than me and who have a higher capacity than I do, so that they can sort of remind me, oh, remember this really good idea. Here's a thing we could use it for, and we could continue doing our same collaboration this way.
So one thing we like to do on Nerdette is talk to well-known people about their little-known obsessions.
Uh-huh.
And through the grapevine, we heard that you are obsessed with the Broken Earth trilogy.
I am, yeah.
I've only read the first two.
Me too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm waiting to start
so
the third. I had
good.
To take a break before I started
yes.
the third. Yeah.
So how did you come across them? This is the series by N.K. Jemisin,
yeah.
who's a science fiction writer. Partly what I think is so cool about them, speaking of representation, is just the idea of, like, people of color in a future world, right? Which doesn't happen all the time when it comes to sci-fi, especially.
Yeah,
you know.
That's part of the, I mean, you know, there's a whole, this whole field of sort of Afrofuturism,
yeah.
Which there's debates about what exactly that means. But uh-huh. What is clear about it is that it is about imagining brown bodies in
survival.
The future, which
yeah.
Which is in itself, shockingly enough, a revolutionary
shouldn't
politic.
Be audacious, so,
right.
But seems to be.
So I read The Inheritance Trilogy,
uh-huh.
Which was her first series, I believe, because the other two members of Clipping had started reading it.
Oh, cool.
And so they told me to
oh
get
my God,
on it.
So you're a book and group,
I,
too.
Oh, yeah. No, we're for sure a book group. All sci-fi, though. We only read sci-fi.
Awesome.
But, yeah, I, the book I'm reading to take a break from Broken Earth is Three Body Problems. So, like, I pretty much only read sci-fi books.
Good.
So that's when I sort of fell in love with Nora's writing. And then, you know, while I was reading those, Clipping started working on our album Splendor and Misery, which is an Afrofuturist album.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, we just, one of the fun things we did while making this album was to sort of try to create a universe in which all of our favorite things that exist in universes that all of our favorite sci-fi writers created can exist in the same universe.
Whoa.
So it's this real, like, kind of messy amalgam of, of sci-fi things. But Nora's characters, N.K. Jameson's characters from the Inheritance Trilogy are referenced in a couple of the songs.
Three siblings happen to be gods, and they fight as siblings do. The world was only water then. The universe was fresh and new. Enefa poisoned Bumba's food.
And she came and saw Hamilton. I think she won the lottery one day and sat in the front row and she tweeted about it. And it happened. The other Clipping guys happened to be in town. We were working on music for that album. So I, like, hit her back on Twitter, like, oh, my God. I'm in love with you, and you're my favorite writer, and we are stealing your stuff for this album, and would you want to come listen to it? So she, like, came around the studio, and we got to play her these songs that are sort of based on her characters, and then we went and ate Cuban sandwiches, and
yes.
We've sort of been in touch off and on ever since, and she gave me her copy of the first two books.
What?
Yeah, of the Broken Earth trilogy.
Wow.
So, yeah, so I, but they're so good.
They're really,
they're so
really good.
Good.
They're excellent.
And I don't even want to, like, tell people, because there's that awesome trick that happens, like, you know, most of the way through the first one.
Yeah, no.
That just, like, it changed the way books worked for me, kind of. You know, I was just like, no, you can't possibly, like, what, how, I don't know how to feel about this.
Yep,
like,
yep.
An was, awesome bit of yeah, misdirection, you know.
So good.
Yeah.
So you mentioned meeting Nora kind of because of Hamilton.
Mm.
You got to meet a lot of amazing people backstage
yeah.
at that show. Was there a person in particular who just, like, you know, if someone had told you 5 years before that, like, you're going to hang out with so-and-so backstage, you would have just been like, that is untrue, sir.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the first real, like, famous champions of the show was Busta Rhymes. He came,
really?
Yeah, he came really early on at the Public, sat in the front row with a red shirt and a bunch of gold chains on, and the Public is a very small theater. You know, we were so...
He was right there.
He was right there. And I don't think they had intended him to sit there. They had seats saved for him further back. We sat there, and I guess at intermission, we heard that they came down and were like, you can actually move to these better seats back there. And he was like, nah, I want to stay up front, you know. And then he came backstage afterwards and just was so complimentary and was, you know, talked to us for an hour about how important the show was and how much he appreciated as sort of a part, one of the building blocks of hip hop, really. Like, he is a living legend in that sense, how much he appreciated the work and the sort of careful references to early rap music. And, like, I can text Busta Rhymes right now. Like, that is a crazy thing to me. I grew up studying this man. When the album When Disaster Strikes came out, I remember picking it up at Amoeba Records in Berkeley.
Amoeba.
On the day it came out. And I remember driving my mom's car that I had put the CD player in and that and playing that CD and having to pull over by UC Berkeley because it was too good. I remember like never having heard anything like it before, and pulling over and listening to the whole thing twice, just parked by a fire hydrant. You know, just like I couldn't get over how amazing this record was. I got to like sit in the studio with him not too long ago and listen to a bunch of his tracks for the sequel to that album, which he's working on. Like, that is a crazy thing that Hamilton did for my life. I was on the BET Awards in a cypher. I've been a rapper my whole life. You could never tell me that I needed to do a Broadway show in order to get in the BET cypher. That is a really crazy cultural moment.
You gotta call it a win, though, man.
For sure. Oh, man, I'll take it anyway. I can get him. We're on the highest form of emotion, holy, sacred, and pure. And what's mine is yours, especially if we move in the same direction, just for one common cause. Just one.
Coming up after the break, we get some real nice homework from Davy Diggs. Not Minnesota nice, real nice.
You're listening to Nerdette.
And now, homework. From a teacher. Well, he plays one on the movie.
I think on behalf of Wonder, I should probably say this. And this is one actually that's real for me also since I had started shooting. So, and I know it sounds cheesy, but I actually do think about this so much since I shot the film. So the film has this motto, choose kind, right? And ever since working on that film, I am struck by how many times a day you have that opportunity, you know, and how easy it is and how little it costs you. And so I found myself for the last, really, it's been, you know, a year since we shot this, thinking about that often, just in the line at Starbucks. Is there a way that, like, smiling at somebody that costs me nothing helps their day out? So in honor of Wonder, I will encourage everybody to think about, spend one day trying to actually think about the number of times you could have chosen kind, whether you do it or not. I think it'll be pretty shocking to you. It is for me.
That is excellent homework.
No, it's real sappy, but, you know, see the movie and then you'll understand.
Yeah, you'll get it.
Or read the book.
Davy Diggs, thank you very much for coming on Nerdette.
Thank you.
I think this is good advice. I would like to couple it with making sure that we all feel also a healthy amount of feminist fury. But there's a balance.
There's a balance. It's interesting to hear you say that, because that is my... Yeah, that's the conundrum about being nice. Like, walking around with a smile on your face all the time, like, invites certain things from other people that can be difficult.
Or also just it makes it seem like things are okay. Mm-hmm. And if they're not, you don't have to pretend they are. But if it's not the fault of the person you're talking to, be nice to them.
There you go.
I've added caveats to be kind.
Feminist caveats. It's good. It's good.
Feminist caveats is the name of our band.
It's very aggressive. But also nice.
This show is produced by us, Trisha Bobita and Greta Johnson, along with Justin Bull.
Our executive producer is Brendan Manizak, and our intern is Bea Aldrich.
Please subscribe wherever you're listening, whether that's Apple Podcasts, or you can follow us on NPR One, or you can listen in the WBEZ app.
Something that is very super helpful is if you leave us stars on Apple Podcasts, like Ground Nuts Are Us and Quixotic Neutral did. Thank you for the kind reviews.
Is a ground nut an acorn that has fallen?
I believe so, yeah.
All right.
Yes, it is.
You can find us on all the social medias, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We are at Nerdette Podcast.
Our theme music is by Poddington Bear.
Do your homework.
Do your homework.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max. And listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.